it's going to work.
So, about some of these old homes. And so I got for you to see this copy of the deed, you might say, certificate here. On February 2nd, 1696-97, Mr. Samuel Russell, John Lindsay Sr., and John Palmer recorded the division of their farm lot, which they divided by casting lots, and is as follows. John Palmer is to have his part, which is 70 acres on the eastern side. Mr. Russell, his part, which is 100 acres next to Mr. Palmer. And John Lindsay Sr., his part, which is 73 acres on the western side of the lot. So this was recorded on February 2nd, 1696-97. And it tells what book and what volume it's in the Branford Records. So you see, right now you're on land that was given to Mr. Lindsay, 1696 or 1697, which is a long time ago, isn't it? So, and that would prove that that is so. Then these are other old documents which I got out, and I thought maybe you boys and girls might like to see the kind of paper that they used in the stamps at the time of the Stamp Act and before. Now this is a division of land, and you see what it says at the end. In witness whereof I have hereunto set my hand and seal, this fifth day of April, in the 10th year of the reign of our sovereign Lord George II of Great Britain, etc., King. Now, here, in one of these others, it has more than that about the king. Well, I guess I didn't bring that one along. Anyway, signed, sealed, and delivered. And this was in 1737.
Now, is that the seal of the king? Or?
And there's a kind of stamp that they had to put on things, you see.
And that money would go.
And
to
they
the
had the Stamp Act Congress.
Yeah.
So, thank you for picking these up.
Are you related to Lindsay?
Pardon?
The Lindsay.
The Lindsays. Well, this house was never sold, and it stayed in the Lindsay family until my aunt had it. And she, her father, and the Mrs. Lindsay that lived here then were brother and sister. And my aunt came to take care of, or help take care of Mrs. Lindsay, her aunt, in her later years. And the Mr. Lindsay died fairly young. So she stayed here, and there was one son who was a semi-invalid. And when he died, that was the end of, he never married, the end of the line as far as the Lindsays went. And so my aunt inherited the place. And then when she died, I found that I was the only one mentioned in her will. So that's how it happens to be here. So after all these generations, it sidestepped, you see. So I'm not a direct descendant of Mr. Lindsay, but his mother and my grandfather were brother and sister. So I used to come up here when I was a little youngster, you know. Loved it very much. About our house, I don't know if there's anything especially you want to know. Again, we have our handmade bricks, and the fireplace of the floor and the back of it had to be modern bricks, fireproof. That's a trunk of a tree and a big pestle where they use it for grinding their corn. The musket over the fireplace and the powder horn, and there's a bullet pouch up on the mantel, go back to Revolutionary days. And that is an English-made gun, and it was carried, so it says in our family records, in the Battle of Bunker Hill, which wasn't Bunker Hill at all, it was Breed's Hill. Mm-hmm. And it has up there, right over the lock, Rex G.R. So that means King George, you see, Rex meaning king. So,
all these artifacts were here in the house.
Yes, yes, that's mentioned in a will, which I have here. I don't know if there's anything else of any great importance to you people.
Is that a baking oven on the right?
It was supposed to be. There was one there. But having water and electricity and other things, if you open the door, you see modern things behind it. It isn't fixed as an oven now. Camouflage. The matter of bells, of course, their cattle, you know, at that time could go up and down the streets or roads they were, or anywhere. And so they had these bells for them. And there was always in every herd a lead cow, and they would put the bell on the lead cow. Now, you see how low it is? And that's a low tone. And you see a little handbell of the same age, see, is a lighter tone. And we know that the heavy tones carry better than the light tones. And so that's why cowbells always were a dull, thuddy sound. That's just a water-worn stone. This they made the bullets with.
Mm-hmm.
A bullet mold, you see.
Put the lid in.
This is the pouch I told you about that they carry the bullets in. And here's the name of the tower. And up here is the crown with Rex Gr.
What are these little things? I see them all the time. In antique shops and whatever.
They clip the wicks to put the candles out.
Oh.
Yeah, those are only, they aren't in very good condition, but it's, they were probably handmade, and it just shows the different patterns that they used. I like them for that.
Yeah.
This tray is called a coffin tray because the early coffins were hexagons, and the tray is that shape. Tin tray.
Yep.
The long handle on the frying pan, you see, is because it was used in the fireplace and you didn't want to get too close. They're very heavy, those.
Foot warmer. Foot warmer over here.
That foot warmer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, we were going to see about things to do with the Civil War, and so I got a few of my books out because I love books. But you see, times haven't changed. When they want to influence people, they use these different media. And the poets wrote poems, and the others wrote articles, and those who are interested in art had books illustrated to try to drive their points home. And naturally, Whittier and Longfellow, which were two of our great poets at that time, wrote very strongly in favor of abolition of slavery and brought out all the horrors of it. You know, they did have slaves in the North. It wasn't just confined to the South.
Four people are at the door.
And of course, they
see more children have arrived.
They abolished them earlier here in the North. Maybe I should wait till this slave business so they get in. People who feel so horribly about the fact that we Americans had slaves, I think a lot of those people are not informed as to the history of slavery. You know, it didn't originate in the United States. If we go way back to Bible times, we know that the pyramids in Egypt were built by slave labor. We know that in the early conquests, the people who were captured were made slaves of the people who captured them. And so we would have some member of a royal family as a slave to perhaps a peasant in those early days. And so when we in the United States had slaves, we were sort of following along. And I think we should never forget that there were many, many people from England and Europe who made a deal with a shipmaster to come to America and serve as an indentured servant. Now, the difference between that and a slave was the fact that the indentured servants made a deal for a certain number of years, and then they were to have their freedom. While the slaves were captured, some of them were stolen, kidnapped, others were bought, and it was for life for them. Now, a lot of the slaveholders, I'm sure, treated their slaves very poorly. But on the other hand, a lot of them treated them very well. Maybe not because they were so kind-hearted, but just for economy's sake. You know that if you have a bike, or your father has a tractor, or you have a nice car, if you don't treat it well, it's going to not last very long. And so you take good care of it. Well, just for plain common sense, a lot of the slaveholders took good care of their slaves, but there were others who were terribly, terribly cruel. And I think one of the hard things was the fact that families were broken up. And according to the auctions that they held, a father could be sold to one slaveholder and a mother to somebody else, and the children one by one to some other slaveholder, and they never see them again. And that to me was very awful, because no doubt they wondered what kind of treatment the other members of the family were getting. Now, I think that it's too bad that some of our black people feel as they do about being descendants of slaves, because again, it's just common sense. If you're going to buy something, you look for something pretty good if you want it to last. On the other hand, if you're going to have something for sale, you polish it up and you get something that folks are going to want. So that when they were even stealing these blacks from Africa, the ones that were the smartest and the strongest and the most intelligent would be the ones they'd want first. So that we had a lot of slaves in our country that were very, very fine as far as their physique went, their mentality, and so forth. And so I always think it's a shame when they're ashamed to say that maybe their grandfather or great-grandfather was a slave, or their great-grandmother, because 9 times out of 10, that person was really a pretty fine person. I have here a will that was made out the 20th day of November, 1775. So, now this is 75, isn't it? So 1775 and 1975, 200 years ago, this was made out. And down here it says, I give and bequeath to my dearly beloved wife this, that, and the other. And then it says, and also I give unto her my Negro man and Negro woman to be hers to serve so long as she shall continue my widow, and the Negro woman to be hers to serve during her natural life. The Negro man's name is Dick, the Negro woman's name is Kate. Then it goes on and says that he gives to his daughter the Negro woman, if the mother should die first. See, he, just like you give the piano away today. And then to one of his sons, he gives the Negro boy, Peter. So we know that at that time, right in this house, there were at least three Negro slaves. So,
it wasn't just in the South.
Yeah. Now, the Northerners began after, you know, our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution and all of those legal documents were signed, began to think pretty seriously about this all being created equal and having a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so, one by one and community by community, they began to free their slaves. And we mustn't think that the North was any better than the South, because the North didn't have the climate that they have in the South, nor did we have the big plantations. so they could get along better without their slaves and probably hire them for a few dollars. While in the South, you see, it was hot and the white man found it hard to work in that heat, and they had hundreds of acres under cultivation where we had maybe 10 or 15 per person. And so the North was first to free their slaves, and finally we all just decided that it was dead wrong, there should not be slaves, and that's one of the things that started your Civil War. But we mustn't forget either that the Civil War was when the South said they were going to secede. And right lately, we've seen what happens when a country divides North from South. It happened in Korea. Now it's happened again, you see. And so I'm just awfully glad that it didn't happen to our country. So the Civil War was a terrible thing because many of the families had sons who moved south, you know, and so there'd be cousins fighting against cousins, brothers maybe against brothers, and it was very awful. We feel a little bit ashamed about it, I guess, but I think we were very fortunate to have the president we had. President Lincoln suffered a lot with the decision he had to make, but he held the Union together. That was what he said. Now, my grandfather enlisted in the Civil War. He left from this house, and he left three little children. His wife had died, and my mother was 3 years old. And he left them with this Aunt Libby, and he went down, had a leg shattered in the Battle of Chancellorsville. So the rest of his life, he had to go with crutches. He experienced firsthand some of the horrors of a military prison camp. They were different, of course. Some were much better than others. But some of the tales he told and some of the records that he kept were just awful. And I think that some of the actions that happened were not probably approved by the commander in charge, but I think it probably was some trigger-happy young soldier, maybe someone who had a lot of hatred in his heart for the North. In one instance where they had been very hungry and fed only bread and water for some time, my grandfather told of this young corporal throwing bread, just hardtack they call it, onto the floor, and some of them that were so hungry stepped over the line that was the end, and they were shot. So you see, those are horrors of war that we don't like to think about, but when we think of the people who went and what they gave up to keep our country, I think we should remember that it wasn't just a picnic that they were on. I think there probably won't be any more coming, and I thought you might like to do this, which again is off the track. This is a document, 1682, and this is when it was recorded. It was first made out in 1719. And the fine print you can't read. Our son and I went over it with a glass, and it took us weeks and weeks and weeks to decipher this because it's the old writing and all and so tiny. But all of North Branford and all of Northford is mentioned here. Up to Piscataquog Pond is mentioned in here. The Indians gave this to the white men. And these are the five Indians' marks. And here are more stamps. It tells the name of them here, the name of the white men who signed it. And I thought you might like to, this I keep in safekeeping, I got it out. I thought you might like to say, well, I had the land grant from the Indians to the place that I'm living on now. So if you want to take it and pack the stamps, you pass it around. Because I don't think there are very many Mr. Davis around. Do you of that sort? No, I don't think so. I doubt if you can read it. I have the paper in there that tells about it. And while you're looking at that, we better go on, hadn't we? Because time is flying. And see how they tried to ornament it. Also, in that same will, my slant top desk is mentioned. And I told you the big musket was mentioned. So we know the ages of those without any questioning. The pewter, of course, is early, and the reason you know that turns so dark, pewter has tin and lead in it, and the lead darkens through the years. And if I put that in a certain wash and let it stay, I probably could get it shinier, but I haven't done it. Now, whether I'm foolish or not, I don't know. Now, some of that is English and some is American pewter. It's a little easier to find some English pewter than American because the householders were asked to give their pewter and have it melted and made into bullets, you see, with the lead in it. And they prized the pewter that they brought from England because it reminded them of home. And so many of them gave their American-made pewter to be made into bullets and saved their English pewter. Consequently, at the present time, it seems that they're finding more pieces of English pewter than they are of American pewter. Now, that's not always been true. But it seems as though now that is the situation. Over here on the corner of the mantel is a picture of New Haven green. And do you know that at one time Connecticut had two capitals, New Haven and Hartford? And a very famous man planned the building there, the State House. That's the white building up here. And it was the time of the Greek Revival period. And he also, or his name is also on a paper, I believe, the little white house up above here, the Greek Revival House, he was also the architect for that. The chairs, that one is called arrowback, because you see these are shaped sort of like arrows, and then this is the thumb design there. The chairs over by the fireplace are the ladderback, and you can understand very easily why they're called ladderback chairs, because they are like ladders. Then down on the floor, there's that mortar and pestle, and that too, you see, was made out of a trunk of a tree. I imagine that was done during the winter, and probably somebody whittled away on it, but see how they took pains to have it a little bit fancy and made the little handles each side just cut out from the trunk of the tree. And that's what they did, you see. In the winter, they made their furniture. They made a lot of little extra things, wooden plates and wooden spoons, things of that sort that they really used, you know. Now, these old panels, these were the original. And I remembered when I was a little girl and came up here, there was paneling. I seemed to be so sure of it, and still it was all plastered over. And two or three times I made little holes in the plaster, but I didn't come out in the right place. But then when they put the heating system in, the man came to me and said, "Mr. Duty, do you know there's paneling in this house?" And I said, "I thought there was, but I couldn't prove it." So, zingo. All the plaster began coming off. I said, "Take it off, expose it, take it off." And aren't these great big beams, see, oaken beams, and they had to be done by hand, and see where the broad axe and the adze tried to smooth them off. And imagine what those beams weigh, and still you see they raised them up. I suppose several people came, and with their oxen and so forth. And then to make it just a little fancy, see how they fixed the corners, the edges here, and that good little end down there. And then what was very seldom done in the farmhouses were the beaded edges up here. And I was happy that they cared enough to put beaded edges here. But the lime in the plaster, you see, has made lines on the woodwork, and the nails have made holes. But this is the way it was way back, and this is the way I like it.
Are there nails in those beams?
They're put together with wooden. Now you can, some of them, yeah. There's some over here. See, here's one.
Yeah.
And then in the corner. Now this corner, there's a picture of this in Mr. Kelly's book of colonial architecture. In fact, there are three pictures of our house in. Outside, holding up the roof, there are four great corbels, and they're not too common at all. So they made it well, and I think a bride came here. We have no record that says it happened just then, but this land was, I read you the article there, and the next year, the young son, John Lindsley Jr., became engaged to this Mary Harrison, and they were married the next June and came here to live. So whether the house was all finished when they moved in, or whether it was still being constructed, I can't say just the day that it all happened, but that, you know, is how we know when the house was built. And I think she probably had courage because there weren't many houses up here, naturally. And she was far from home. They were down in Brantford. But they did have courage, like I guess you all have courage, too. And he said, no, you'd never be happy to patch it. But he said, I think what you should do is leave your plastered walls on three sides. Then he said, see if we, I'll draw a diagram of your west wall with all the idiosyncrasies and other things there, and then see if you can get wide boards, and my men will make paneling the feather edge just as it was in the ones that we uncovered. And so my husband and I went up to Vermont to a mill up there to get, we couldn't get the boards as wide around here, to get the wide boards, and then they set up, one of his specialists set up his saw and things right in this room and took the boards and feather edged them and made them to match. Now you see, through the years, this center beam and the board over there were off somehow. Something happened, or else when it was built, it happened that way. So when we put it in, we did it the same way that we found it. So that's why that's that way. Now I do think, this doesn't have much to do with history, I do want you to see my owl. Doesn't that look like an owl with its eyes and its little nose and its little feathered head?
That's a bigger one
up here. Yeah, and here's another one up here with a big eye and a little eye, and this is like a hoot owl. But I love my owl. And these boards. Now we had to do the same with the floor. You see, in the other room, it's the oaken boards, and they're just as strong as could be. But this was a pine floor, and it was not safe. So this floor came, the boards from Vermont. Now over here is a melodeon, and that's a kind of an instrument that was used Civil War time, and probably when Old Black Joe and some of those other things were written. Nellie with the light, no, Jeannie with the light brown hair, probably on an instrument like that, the melody was fingered out and composed. The chair there is a much earlier one. This, the rocker over there, and the bench over here are all the same period, you see. And here, we have a pair of chairs called the Heart and Crown chairs, and we know that they probably were made before the Revolutionary War, because I presume after the Revolutionary War and we were no longer colonists of England, that they would bother to make Heart and Crown chairs. Do you think so?
No.
And while it's nice and comfortable here, they still like to have it pretty. And see how nice the back is.
Yeah.
Pretty. Those chairs, I don't think I did tell you that this is called a Windsor type of chair, and the little high chair. Now see the little step on that, all worn, rough. I love that, because I think all the little feet that were pushing on there, you know?
Yeah.
And so I look at it and I think, I wonder how many generations of little feet it took to wear that out. But I love it very much. Now, we think that's a girl. These are called banister backs, and these are very old too. See, the back is like a banister, and there's a mate to it. This is a rocker. This is a straight one. My books. This desk is about the period of Lincoln. This, they make now, this is like a hutch. See, this top tips back, and then it's fastened by little dowels, and then the seat comes up, if you want to, and I have some wooden things in there. And see, youngsters would use that near the fireplace, and the back up high would protect them from the drafts, and they'd get the warmth from the fire. And then when they had to put away their toys, they'd put them in the bottom part. I think that was
pretty clever.
Very, very good planning. Now this was the boarding room. And the reason that they had that on the first floor, of course it was so cold, and they wanted it near the fireplace and to be handy because all the children were born at home, you know. And so that's what this was used for. Now the paper I have here, we've got it so covered up with our rogues gallery that it's hard to find it, but I have a little bit of an early, early primer. Yeah. And you see they start with like numbers, A, B, C, D, E, F, now G for goblet, H, I, J, K, L, M for moth, N would be down here, and nightingale, olive, and O, C, and it goes right up to the end of the alphabet. And I was a long time wondering, am I going to get tired of those little rectangles staring at me all the time? But I thought for my library, that would be nice, and I've loved it. I haven't gotten tired of it.
You have a book to match it.
So it was fun picking that out, but it did take a long time. Guess I was a slow motion person. That clock isn't an old one. Our son brought us that in Germany, the Black Forest. This French call is original, and it probably dates back to about the time of Benjamin Franklin. And at that time, when the French, this sees the beginning of the metal print, at that time, the French tried to tell or represent an episode in their history in their pictures. And I have no way of knowing what episode this refers to, but doesn't this make sense? Here are some people perfectly contented. See, chickens, the men, everybody is contented there. But the dog is very vicious with this visitor. Now that could represent one little group of people, be a little tribe or something like that, having some enemy or some neighboring tribe come. Well, now we see that there was trouble, but this could be the battle. You see, everybody is at sword's point there, and there is conflict goes on. And then the third episode, see here, this is the same outfit as this. And here is a young lady, so that he could have come in the story to have made love with her. Now the dog is no longer after him, and so they have a treaty signed, and they live together in harmony. You see, the two little places, villages or areas, could unite, you see, and live together in peace. Now, it could be that, but then when you say, Mrs. Judy, where in France did that happen? I don't know, but it just could. But I think it's fun to try to make sense of it, because I do know that their early tapestries did tell a tale. And it seems to me as though that might be what that pictures.
The tents were so high then.
Yes, it's high.
So
and do you
high.
Know why? Because they had trundle beds they put underneath. Little low beds for the little children. Now, you see, there aren't too many rooms in the house, and they had good-sized families, so that during the day, the bed was pushed under, a little trundle bed. Then at night, it was brought out, and maybe a couple little kids would sleep in that. And then here's a little cradle for the wee ones. And mothers would do their work and put their foot on here and rock it and knit at the same time. I can't knit, but I could rock. So I don't think I'd make a very good colonial mother. That chair is a Boston type of chair. Yeah. Now this floor is whitewood, American tulip. And you see we have the same thing here. But aren't those wide boards? Imagine how big the trees are. You see, it probably was a primeval forest, you know. Virgin
wood. How come the beds were so short, though?
Short? You know, they really aren't as short.
Expedition.
Now, again, these are white wood floors. And this bed is a tiger maple. See why it's called tiger? And see the streaks in it? And then up at the head. Board, it's the same. And this coverlet is linen and wool. The white part, or its ivory part, is linen threads, and then it's done with wool to make the pattern. When I got the paper for this room, you see the design, the little figure there is not too different from the little pattern that's used in this early weaving. It's not a copy of it, but it's similar, you see. Mm-hmm. I thought they would tie in together very well. Now, I told you my grandfather fought in the Civil War and was wounded. For many years, he was a semi-invalid, couldn't get around very much. And he was interested in drawing and painting. So he took part of the headboard to his mother's bed that had been discarded up there, cut a place out, and he painted that, the flowers around it, and kept himself occupied. So I like that because he did it. The bed warmer over there. Now this bed is called a youth's bed. You see, this is the third step. You had your cradle. Then I told you about the little bed that they put under the big bed. And then when the children got older, maybe like you folks, I'm sure you'd probably get into a youth's bed. Some of you shorter ones, because you aren't quite, you wouldn't be too long for that. Now you see, it's put together with ropes. All of these old beds are put together with ropes, but this will show you how, you see. And then it's laced and back and forth up the sides, And then they'd put a feather tick on it, or corn husks, or straw in a tick, and that would be their bed. This chest has some of the pattern showing that was a sailor's chest. These look like four drawers, don't they? But they aren't, they're blanket chests, and this is a fake. It's not, they aren't drawers, it's just the top lifts up, and they put their blankets in there. Then the two bottom ones are drawers. This Boston rocker, you see, had a design on the back of it in gold leaf. But through the years, that's worn off. I guess, oh, and this is a yoke back chair. This is an oldie. And you see, they used to carry water and things on yokes over their shoulders. And that is the design, you see. Well, I guess that's it for this little room. This is another. And everybody's. However, he was honored and was given a medal by President Kennedy. I think that was probably one of his happiest moments because he was a great admirer of President Kennedy. These are pictures when they came back down off the mountain, and they were a pretty tired looking bunch. Over here are pictures of my boy growing up, little fellow, and a high school graduate, and when he got his master's out in California in cinematography. So these are some of his. And in the little cabinet here are some of his mementos. You see, these are things they shape to make music, pottery from Peru. This is similar to the boats they have on Lake Titicaca. These he got in Holland. This is a water gourd that he got in India. That one he got in Pakistan. Here's a book that he wrote and had published, and some more pottery. So that, I say this is my son's corner of the house. And that little trunk went out west in a covered wagon and stayed in Wisconsin for a great number of years and then came back. Down by Mrs. Davis' feet is a little butter churn. And here is another chest for linens. And these are hat boxes. Now, I've been doing a lot of talking, so I think we should have a model. This hat is a covered wagon hat, bonnet, so I think we should find a girl. The first girl here is this one. So let's model a hat that went west in the covered wagon. Now, isn't that nice?
Yes.
I think it's lovely. You make a very nice model. The other box has mourning hats and veils in, which are very somber. Now, here is a picture of the ironclads. You had that probably in your history, the Monitor and the Merrimack. Some of my little treasures. Now, be careful you don't fall down my back stairs. This is one of the big beams. They call it a summer beam. Used in these old houses, you know, from one side to the other. So we couldn't remove that. But it makes it sort of hazardous here by the back stairs. So remember, there's stairs here, and they're hard if you want to roll down. She did here a little bit. This was a... I call this my loom room. This was a bedroom. But you notice, perhaps you did, on those coverlets, both the brown and the blue, they had a seam right up through the middle. And the tablecloths and the early bed sheets had a seam right up through the middle. And this is the reason for it. You see, these early looms only could take that width. And so they made two sections and seamed it up through the middle. Now I've got to get this repaired. These rugs were made on this loom, but it was taken down, and the woman who did it died, and this loom was taken down and moved, and I finally succeeded in getting it back. You see, when they took it down, they numbered where the different parts went, so it's been put together, but it has to be repaired, and then, of course, that's just hung to show where it goes. They're even, and I'll have to take something and get a little of the rust off from that. But you see, here's a loom exactly like it down in Williamsburg, Virginia. And this has only two petals there, so you can only do the double. They call it the tabby weave. And I took lessons in weaving and know how to do the tabby weave. So if I get it fixed, I can make rugs like this. I don't know when I'll do it, but I think it would be kind of nice. But it does sort of take up